Welcome to Book Me Podcast, sponsored by Nimbus Publishing. I'm Lindsay Glode Raininbird. Join me as we journey through contemporary Canadian literature, reading as much as we can and chatting with authors, illustrators, and other bookish folk, celebrating our dynamic, diverse, and vibrant national literary scene as we go. So grab a snack, get cozy, break that binding, dog ear those pages. Let's dig into it. Today, I'm joined by my friend and producer, Amanda Gallagher, to talk about Kid Lit and all the books that shaped us as kids and that we've been loving this spring, and also some tips that I have for building a bookworm in your family. So we're excited to talk about it. Let's get to it.
Thank you for asking me to join you.
Thank you for coming.
Of course. I'm already here, so
actually, it works. You have a brand new niece.
I actually have four new nieces.
Four new nieces.
Yeah. I think children's books should be read at any age, but now it's like I have a reason to buy them again. Like I don't have to feel guilty and I'm just like buying them all books. Yeah. So before we get into these books that we love and that we want to talk about today, what kind of books were interesting to you as a kid?
My favorite books as a kid are always rhyming books and I like silliness. So really anything that kind of made me laugh. I liked Sherry Fitch when I was a kid.
She's God tier in terms of lyrical books. Beautiful.
Who doesn't love Sherry Fitch, really?
Same. 100% same. Rhyming books, you have me immediately. Like, I love them. But for me, I was also really drawn to, like, the absurd books, you know? And, you know, when you get it a little bit older, it's like the Alice in Wonderlands, the ones where there's like the anthropomorphized animals and they're doing kind of weird stuff. And maybe there's like an element of danger in them, too. Like, I like that because I think kids books, like, they shouldn't just explore the happy topics. They should explore all the different like gamut of emotions and experiences.
My favorite books when I was a kid were Audrey and Don Wood. They did The Napping House, which is just the most beautiful pictures, but also hilarious because it's like a flea is sleeping on top of a mouse, sleeping on top of a cat, sleeping on top of a dog, sleeping on top of a child, sleeping on top of a grandma. What's going to happen? I love that book. And then they also wrote a couple of other books together that were even like a little dark. There's one called Hecate Peg, which is an all-time favorite of mine about a witch that steals children and turns them into food.
I love that. I mean, no, I don't love eating children. I love that because, like, I mean, I read the Grimm's fairy tales, and then when I studied, like, I took an elective in university for children's literature, and I read the like original Grimm's, and like they were grim.
They're very grim. That's why they're called Grimm's.
Dark. But those types of stories, for some reason, have always drawn me in. The ones with a little bit of danger, a little bit of macabre elements. Neil Gaiman. And it's good for that. He writes a lot of like children's stories like that, that have those kind of different, darker vibes. So I'm down with that. And also like the emotional impact, like Shel Silverstein, like The Giving Tree.
Oh my gosh. Where the Sidewalk Ends. That's my favorite Shel Silverstein. It's not, you know, emotional, but it is funny. But the other Don and Audrey Wood book I wanted to mention really quickly is my all-time favorite. And it's called King Bidgood's in the Bathtub and He Won't Get Out. Nina loves this book too, because it shows his bum on the end. Oh, she thinks it's so funny. But it's a king that won't leave the bathtub, and they keep sending in new people to try and get him to leave. But whatever they want him to come out to do, like come out and have lunch, he's like, no, tonight we dine in the tub. And then the pictures are amazing. It's like these luscious, like detailed, like almost like realistic paintings. And he's in the tub with his friend, like his knight, who's got his entire armor on. And there's just a feast and all the crazy stuff happening in the background. It's beautiful.
That's amazing. I've never heard of these books. And now I'm going to have to go find them.
Those are my favorite books of all time. Oh, I love them.
I love that. He's probably very pruney, though.
Yeah. Eventually he leaves and it's pretty funny. It's pretty funny how they convince him to go in the end.
Amazing. So ones that are kooky, absurd, whimsical, that use kind of fun, playful language, you know, the onomatopoeia, like when you say words, you feel really excited to, you know, feel them in your mouth. And actually, I don't know if we're ready to talk about it, but it leads me into like one of the books we are going to talk about today, A Great Big Night by Kate Inglis.
Great book.
Amazing book. It's that one is, it's like, onomatopoeia gone crazy. Like every single word in it, like clickety clackety, clickety clack. Like it feels good. I don't know if like when you read it for the first time, but I felt like, okay, I need to find a child to read this out loud to immediately.
So this book is about three frogs that have a band and they travel around. And every time you hear the clickety clack, you know that the band is coming. And so all of these animals come pouring out of the forest to listen, except for one. He's a big, mean bird who's like your grumpy neighbor who just hates music, hates noise, hates everything. So he's the only one who says, you know, stop this music.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they have like a big storm and all of a sudden he loses everything. And all of a sudden they discover another way to use this traveling band and music to then help the grouse rebuild.
Yes, they all come together. And when the animals come together in the end, I don't know, it just hits me in the feels. It was just a really...
a little tear.
Yeah, just shed a little tear. I don't know why. Like, that kind of stuff really makes me emotional. But no, I thought that was a beautiful, fun book. And just, yeah, one that would be... I could picture a bunch of kids sitting in a semicircle, just like joy on their faces hearing that one read aloud. And that was illustrated by José Bisseyon, who is like... again, God tier illustrator. She's yes. from Montreal, and a lot of her books are offered in, or the ones she's worked on are offered in both French and English. And a couple of my top favorite local children's books are ones that she's illustrated. So there's Come Back to Earth, Esther, which is a beautiful STEM book about a young girl who's like, all she wants to do is go to space. And everyone's like, oh, come on, come back to Earth. Like all the adults are aww. Like keeping her down. But then in the end, something magical happens. So it's pretty cool. And she actually authored that one as well. And then The Snow Nose, which is a beautiful, calming, like wintry nature book
kind
as well.
Kind of more lullaby-esque.
Yeah, like, and that one was
quiet. Written- winter night type book.
Yes, exactly. Peaceful, Dead of Winter, which it's spring now, so we're not gonna go there too much, but in next winter pick that book up. It's by Jennifer McGrath. So, and then she also illustrated another beautiful book that we are excited to talk about,
everybody's new favorite book, including my daughter, who says Whitney Moran is her new favorite author.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So Whitney Moran, she's a Nimbus Publishing's managing editor, author extraordinaire. She was on the podcast two episodes ago, and now we get to talk about her beautiful book, I Want to Build a Sea House.
Mm-hmm. So this is a book about a little girl who gets a new sibling, and it makes her want to run away far, far away, as far as she can get, maybe to a house in the middle of the sea. And then all of the wonderful, fun, adventurous things that can happen out there. And then kind of all of the things that aren't so great that can happen if you're living at sea, like storms and loneliness. And it makes her kind of think about what good stuff's back at home.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. You can have the best of both worlds. You can be imaginative. You can have your sea house and you can be at home with your new sibling. So I really, this book resonated with me a lot when I first read it, because I actually didn't know the subject matter going in. Mm-hmm. I hadn't read the blurbs or anything. So when I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, like, because I was an only child up to the age of six. So I kind of experienced that feeling of a new sibling coming in at an age where I could understand kind of what was happening. And I grew up by the ocean, and you don't know this about me, but my great grandfather was a lighthouse keeper. So aww. Yeah. So at Duncan's Cove, Shabakto had lighthouse, like my grandfather and their whole family, they lived there for 30 years and he manned the lighthouse there. So like anything ocean related or sea, I feel like it's in my blood, like I just automatically gravitate towards it. So that, and just the imagination and the fun and the creatures, there's mermaids and
this. Ending too. I Want to Build a Sea House. I was like almost weeping. I was just like, this is so beautiful.
It really is. You can tell it came from the heart, and you can tell that she just puts so much thought into every word. This is like, if you have people you need to buy a gift for, this is the one that you want to get
them.
This
is the one.
This is the one. And another thing, going back to José's art, what I think she does so beautifully and what you really see in this book, it's the depth of the illustration. So when you see the spreads and they go over these two pages, and at the top, there's, you know, the little girl and she's sitting and she's looking down at the water and you can see all the plants and the ocean, like the depths of the ocean, all the different layers you feel like you're in a part of it, but then it's still got that beautiful sort of watercolory vibe. And I don't know, it's just, it's absolutely stunning how she does spreads.
And there's always something whimsical in the pictures. I love children's books that have illustrations where you're always discovering something. Every time you read it, you see something new that kind of delights you in a picture. I think there's a picture in here of a whale who has like a pipe. Am I crazy? I feel like that was a thing.
A whale. Yeah, he's fishing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so the whale is a fishing pole and she's got a fishing pole and she's sitting in her little boat fishing and the whale is fishing too because, like, you know, you need a fish. He needs something to keep the time.
He has a mouth, but
he has baleen.
So it's fine. No, but I love that. I love looking at a picture and just seeing something cute but slightly out of place.
Yeah.
It warms my heart.
Yeah. For me, this wasn't a food foraging mission for him. Like, it was definitely a pastime.
Hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just like, hey, he's got his little fin up.
I don't need to fish with you, but I will.
I love this. The page where it says, I'll entertain the merfolk with stories, tales, and lore. They'll braid me crowns of kelp and toast me tasty, squishy s'mores. Like, I love that. I love the alliteration. I don't know. Can't talk enough good stuff about this book.
But we have to.
And you read this one.
Tell everybody about it.
So you mentioned that Nina is Whitney's her favorite author. So how did she react when you read her this for the first time?
Oh, we were really excited to read this book for the first time. But she loves any books that rhyme. And she has a baby brother who sometimes can, you know, be the center of attention because he's medically complex. So she, I think, really relates to the idea of having to run away sometimes because maybe she feels like she's not the center of attention and wondering what it would be like if she left. Would you miss me? And it's like, of course we would miss you. You bring so much to everything. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that's why you're emotional even talking about
it. Yeah, I'm like a good cry.
Yeah. No, that's so amazing. See, like, that's what's so beautiful, especially about children's books. It's like it's resonating with you as a mom for these things that you may have seen in your daughter and you recognize. And like you're hitting all the layers are hitting you in a different way. And they're hitting Nina in a different way, too. You know, she's feeling stuff that's probably complex and like she's like, oh, okay, I feel heard.
Like, yeah, you know? It's actually so funny because I'll be reading her books and it will just hit me and I'll start tearing up. And she'll look at me and be like, are they happy tears, Mom? I'm like, yes. I'm just so emotional when I read. It's true.
It's good, though. You're in it. That's how it should be. I mean, I think for us, like avid readers, that's it. Like that emotional hit, you know, you're in it. You're in the story. And this one is just, you fall right into it. It's easy to just kind of like get lost in a beautiful way. So
I had a question for you because you said that your grandfather was a lighthouse keeper. Mm-hmm. Have you read The Littlest Lighthouse then by Lana Shoup?
Lana Shoup. Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah. I mean, and we also did a podcast episode on it.
I know. But as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, that reminds me of The Littlest Lighthouse.
The Lonely Little Lighthouse.
The Lonely Little Lighthouse.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No, beautiful. Yeah. To have the lighthouse personified and have him have feelings and be like, I'm being neglected. That is true. And that really resonated with me as well, because I don't know how many people know this, but a lot of our lighthouses on the East Coast have been like left to kind of just go into disrepair. And it's really sad. And I don't think it's just sad for, you know, people who are lighthouse legacy families. Like, I think it's sad for people from the area. And, you know, there's preservation societies that have come together, like people who are really excited about like trying to find ways, unique ways to keep them funded and keep them upkept so that people can visit and, you know, because they're a part of history.
Yeah. But
yeah. Yeah. Like having him have feelings. What a great way to instill, you know, that sense of activism in kids.
Yeah. That's exactly what we talked about when I was interviewing her. So go listen to that podcast if you're interested. Something that she said that still sticks with me is that we don't give kids enough credit and they're the ones that are probably going to change the world.
It's season 9, episode 5, folks, with Lana Shoup. It's the Lonely Little Lighthouse episode. So, yeah.
The next book I wanted to talk about is The Terrible, Horrible, Smelly Beach, because it kind of plays into that same idea of, you know, recycling, picking up our environment, taking something that is dirty and broken down and making it new again. But how do you convince people to do that, because not everybody wants to go clean up a trash up smelly, terrible, horrible beach, right?
No, I actually did that in junior high. I don't know if you did that. I grew up, and my junior high was in Heron Cove, and so we were on the water, and we all took a boat out to McNabb's Island and cleaned the beach.
Child labor.
So that's how you do it. You force people. You say you're going on a hike, and then you say you're cleaning all day. But it was great.
You trick them into doing it.
Right. Which is Sneaky Little Mermaid.
Which is what this book does. The Terrible, Horrible, Smelly Beach. A mermaid tricks a bunch of pirates to go clean up a beach because they have to go and dig for treasure on the beach, and it's covered in trash. So of course you have to get rid of the trash before you can get the treasure. That's a good way to convince children, or anybody, grown-ups mostly actually, to do something, is to trick them.
Okay, if you're a mermaid, you can resort to trickery. I think mermaids are known to be a little bit crafty.
You could resort to it.
Maybe not always employ those strategies, but this book, though, The Terrible, Horrible, Smelly Beach, is a follow up to The Terrible, Horrible, Smelly Pirate. And it's written by Jacqueline Halsey and Carrie Muller. And the pictures are by Paul G. Hammond. Just an FYI, if you're looking to pick it up, there's two books, so you can read one and then the other.
So I haven't read the first one.
Okay, so I have, and I did an online voiceover for an ASL version of this. And so it's about this pirate. And so the pirate shows up in this second book, and he's like, hi, I'm a not so terrible, horrible, smelly pirate. But in the first one, he was terrible, horrible, and smelly. And this mermaid, she ends up tricking him. She sends him to some treasure, but the treasure, I don't want to spoil it, but it's something to help with his hygiene overall. And he's happy. You know what? He feels better once he's cleaned up and he's not so terrible, horrible, or smelly. That is a way I wish I could trick somebody to, like,
my kids especially, because they hate taking baths.
Yeah. So you just like hide some body wash, hide a bar of soap, and send them on their way, and then they'll be excited. But yeah, no. So he shows up at the beginning of this book and he's not so terrible, horrible, or smelly. And the mermaid's like, okay, well, let me send you on another adventure. And yeah, and you...
Since the first one worked so well.
Yeah.
The illustrator, Paul G. Hammond, is one of my favorite artists locally. Anyway, he's got the most comedic style. I don't know if you can say that about pictures, but they just make me laugh. The way he kind of draws people's faces, the way he illustrates an entire background, it's just every page, it's like has this like laughter bubbling in it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, I'm looking at the cover because it's in front of us right now. It's like simplistic, but it's not. There's like a depth to it, but it reads in a way that you can just, it feels simplistic in like a way that only an artist can make something seem that way, when that actually there is so much depth. And yeah, the characters, their faces, the expressions, the frowns, like, I get what you mean when you say comedic.
This is just one of those books that you can do the voices for, and
it doesn't matter how good
it will go
you are
over
with your,
so well.
Yeah.
Like this. There she blows, squawked Parrot Polly. Heave ho, me hearties, cried the so terrible, horrible, smelly pirate.
Beast she dragged out for that.
See, listen,
pirate.
I'm a very big proponent of doing the voices.
Yes, same. Yeah.
I actually have quite a few tips on how to make a bookworm, because a lot of our parenting friends come to me and my husband Gerald and ask, what did you do to make Nina and Lydian really love books so much? And I always have a couple of tips. The first one is, ever since she was very small, if she ever brought a book to me, I would always stop whatever I was doing and read to her. As a parent, you have so much you're doing all the time. And there's a real instinct to be just in a minute, you know, like, let me just finish XYZ and then I will. But if you make reading the way to kind of cut through that noise, it will automatically make it like one of the most fun things. So that's one. Always make the time, no matter what.
Well, before you move on to your next point, I think that's amazing. I've never actually really thought about it, but it's so true, because especially in like such a screen heavy world, like, it's so easy to pick up our phones, to pick up something when you're feeling that bored, oh, I want to like look at something feeling, but you're you're consciously teaching your kid to unconsciously start to pick up a book every time that they feel like they're getting that feeling and they want something to capture their attention. And it's like, okay, reading, there's it always make it a priority. That's beautiful. Yeah. I love that.
And then
that.
It also reminds you as a parent who's always harried and busy and feeling overwhelmed maybe to take that small moment in time to relax and sit and quietly read a book. It's like a whole mental reset.
Amazing. There's always time for a always. Book, yeah. Especially a children's book. Like you can find that 5 minutes.
If you want to raise readers, then that's the biggest thing is no matter what, if they bring you a book, just stop and read it. It's going to take you like 5 minutes.
I love this. Okay, what's your next tip?
My next tip is do the voices. No matter what weird voice you make, they're going to love it. If you even just go up high, squeaky like this, and you're like, oh, they're going to love it. If yeah. you're like, oh, I'm a big, that's a scary thing, they're going to love it. They love everything. And if you can't do that, something that one of my best friends, Ashley Timo, her husband, Rob, instead of doing a voice, technically, he will just read in a different accent. So he'll read yeah. a whole book in like a Russian accent or something. And it just makes it fun for the adult to read it.
Also, to add to that, the sounds. Yep. So when it's something is squealing or something is, or when you, like the illustrators and the author take great care in choosing how to words show up on a page. So if there's a big, like I was just looking at the terrible, horrible, smelly beach, and I think the word was thunk, and it was this yep. huge word, and it's spread across the page, and it's in this bright orange color, and you know that that is a word that you are supposed to be enunciating and making it loud and making it like really get them excited about understanding how sounds and words like flow together and like how they can feel. And it's just, it takes them on an adventure that's dynamic versus that one note, like reading in the same tone, monotone. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it adds something for me. 100%.
And a good book to practice reading, if you don't like doing voices, it kind of forces you to do it, is The Book with No Pictures by BJ Novak, because there are no pictures. Instead, it's a book telling you, well, teaching kids that actually if an adult reads a book, they have to read the words that are on the page. It doesn't matter what they say. It might say, oh, I'm saying this in a robot voice, bleep, blorb. And then the book goes on to say, I didn't want to say that. Now I have to sound like a monkey. So it's like really forces you to do the voices all kinds of ways, whether you want to or not. And my daughter actually loves that book too.
Yeah. And then they start to do it in the same way. Like even something I've noticed with my eldest niece, because she's reading more advanced books now, because she's a little older. She's like 6 months older than the others. She expects it now. Like we recently watched her for a couple days. And she was expecting like those parts of the book to be read that same way. Like she knows it, and she's like coming at it, and she's adding her own kind of unique take on it as well. And it's so beautiful. So, you know, you talk about cultivating a bookworm, like you can see it unfolding.
My daughter Nina is just at the age where she's learned to read, and she's starting to be able to read books completely on her own. She always had an amazing memory, so she would memorize books anyway. But now she can read them. So she'll read them to her stuffed animals or her dolls or her little brother, and she does the voices, and her voices are great as well. But yes, my third tip, how to raise a bookworm, is to make buying books and getting books a real event. So we go to the library every single weekend usually, and it's always you pick whatever books you want, but then your local library has like a million different things that are equally exciting. So Truro Library always has like little scavenger hunts and stuff like that. So it's like a big thing to go to the library to pick out our books and then have all brand new books for the week. But then also I'm a crazy book buying person. I have to put myself on a book buying ban because I'm a hoarder and I buy too many books. That said, when I go to the bookstore, I always let Nina pick a book too. So it's just about making it an event, making it exciting, so that when we're like, we're going to the bookstore, it's not like, oh, that's boring. It's yes, we're going to the bookstore and we're going to get a new book.
Yes, it's a destination. And yeah, and it ends with something really sweet, because it's like not a lot of destinations repay you over and over and over and over again. But the book, exactly. It's like you get to go there. It's a whole experience. And that reminds me too, because like I said, I grew up just outside of the city. So like 25 minutes away from downtown Halifax. And when we would go to Woozles in downtown Halifax, it was like that didn't happen that often. Like this wasn't like an every week trip for me. It was like the biggest deal on earth, like to get to go to Woozles and be like, whoa, there's stickers, there's books everywhere, like I'm freaking out, like
it's a wonderland.
Oh yeah, like squeals of delight. Like it was just that experience of being able to do that and come home with a book and have that, it's just so special.
Yeah, that's something my mom always did for, she was a single mother. So that's what she did for me and my brother, is every single Saturday, she would take us to like 3 different libraries, which is crazy. Like, imagine spending your whole day just going from library to library. I can, because I did it my whole childhood and it was amazing. And I just remember always lugging home the biggest bags of books, and I still do that.
Yeah, I had swimming lessons attached to a library. So it's like after swimming or before swimming, if we were there early, I would just spend time in the library, just like a little bookworm. And did your elementary school have a library in it?
Like, it did.
Ours was like, I went back as an adult. It was really tiny.
It was tiny, but it felt big.
It felt huge.
Do you remember Scholastic Book Fair?
Oh my God. Yeah. And did you guys have the bookmobile?
We had the bookmobile. It came to the end of our street. Oh my God.
Yes. They need to be bringing back bookmobiles.
Bookmobiles were the deal.
They are the deal.
That brings me to another book we're talking about, which, so this is mine and my daughter's favorite local book. It's called Wildflower by Brianna Corr Scott. And it's sort of a retelling about the Thumbelina story of the miniature girl who goes to, has a mother who always wanted a child. And so then she gets the little Thumbelina girl sent to her and realizes she can't keep her forever. So Wildflower, the little girl, has to leave. She's tiny and cute. And then, you know, all of the bad things happen to her while she's gone. Like, she gets stuck in a hole with a mole and...
Mole and a mouse together.
Yeah, together.
They're conspiring. this is also one of my most favorite Atlantic Canadian children's books. Brianna Corr Scott. Amazing.
Amazing.
Amazing. Beautiful. Gorgeous books. So lyrical. And just the verse is stunning. But just her artwork. I could go on all day, and we have talked about her on a lot of different episodes. So we adore her and her everything she's done. But Wildflower for me, I don't know. It's just the emotion in this book and the nature and just the way that it is, like, you cannot own a wildflower. Like, that is basically the premise of this entire book. And even when I feared for this girl at one point in time when she gets locked in the hole with the mouse and the mole wants to marry her, and she's away from the sunlight, and people are just trying to keep her. But her mom, who loved her, knew, like, you couldn't keep her. You had to let her explore the world. And
don't worry, she does escape in the end.
Yeah, she doesn't, and she's not still in the hole.
Don't worry, she's not still in the hole.
You know, she makes it out, but it's just a beautiful adventure. And it's one that, you know, it's not too verbose. It's not too word heavy. It flows.
And it's rhyming again, also a good rhyming book.
Yeah, it just flows. And kids, every kid I've read this book to is absolutely obsessed with it. And like you said, it's Nina's favorite. Like, what did she, do you remember the first time you read it to her?
The first time I read it to her, well, actually, it was my mom who read it to her. She gave it to her as a gift. And it is the same kind of wonder that I remember having hearing the Thumbelina story, is just the idea of a miniature person. We still talk about that idea of having like a little person. And she's always just like, I wish I was as small, I could fit in your pocket and you could take me around. And I was just like, yeah, you'd be a little wildflower. I'd have to let you go.
Yes. Oh, that's beautiful. So before we wrap up, I know we kind of dove into this a little bit because you were talking about how Nina, like, her favorite author is Whitney, mm-hmm. and she loves this book, Wildflower. But like, what books as she, so how old is she now?
She's 6.
Yeah. So she's 6. So I'm sure her tastes are evolving. Like, what kind of books is she really gravitating towards? Because this is like, look, it's like market research for authors. Like, what are the ones that she's like, okay, I need to have that when you guys go on your adventures?
Actually, I was talking to her last night during our bedtime routine, and she had a whole bunch of thoughts about books and how she felt about them. So have a listen here.
Oh, you recorded it.
I recorded it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's play it.
What we're going to talk about on this podcast this week is we're going to talk about children's books. And I was wondering what you like about reading.
I get to read with you.
I love to read with you too. Would you call yourself a bookworm?
Yes.
What do you think makes a really good book?
If it's silly.
If it's silly, yeah. What makes a book silly?
If it has words that do not make sense.
Nonsense words?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like nonsense words. Like the book we just read.
Yeah.
The Snigger and the Floose. Can you think of any other books that make you laugh?
Hats for Sale.
Hats for Sale. Yeah, that is an excellent book about a man who's walking around and he keeps all the hats he's going to sell on top of his head. And then one day he takes a nap under a tree and what happens?
All the monkeys take his hat.
And he says, "You monkeys, you give me back my hats." And the monkeys, what do they say? I'd also like to know if you have a favorite author.
Is the author who writes the book?
Yeah.
Did Whitney do it?
Yes, Whitney did it.
Whitney.
Whitney's your favorite author? She's my new favorite author, too. And she wrote the book about the sea house, right?
I love that book.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about building a house and leaving me forever?
No.
No. What are you going to do? Live with me forever?
Yeah.
Till you're old and I'm old?
Yeah, I'm going to live in this house for 100 years.
Until we're both two little old ladies?
Yeah.
Fetch me my tea. You told me before that you had another favorite author, too.
Jan Brett.
Jan Brett. What do you like about Jan Brett?
I like the little sides that like give you ideas what is going to happen next.
Yeah, the illustrations in the Jan Brett books are really cool because they give you a little peek of what's going to happen on the next page.
And they're like shaped of the book we're talking about. Like if it was Mickey and the Snow White Mittens, she would put a mitten.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing your thoughts about books with me. You're very helpful. And now we're going to read Lizzie and the Cloud.
Yeah.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
I love that.
One of Nina's other favorite books is a new one that just came out. It's called Serge the Snail Without a Shell. It is the most adorable, heartwarming story of a snail who doesn't have a shell, and they call him a slug, and it's horrible. And he's so sad and he feels he doesn't fit in. And so he goes looking around a beach to see if he can find something that could be his shell, and then maybe he would fit in. And it ends in just a really heartwarming way of accepting who you are and being happy with it.
That's another one that hit me in the heart, pulled on my heartstrings. And it's written by Harriet Alita Lai and Rosa Rankin G. And artist is Andrea Blinick. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. The colors in it, bright, beautiful, like lots of greens and orange and red and like kind of a tealy blue. And I just the close-ups of Serge when he's kind of crying and he has the tears in his eyes. And all he wants is to be like all of the other snails. But then he starts to kind of recognize he comes into himself, he gains his self-confidence. And it's really a beautiful book about celebrating what makes you unique and different and like helping you find your identity, because differences are what make the world beautiful, right?
Of course.
And that's a new spring book. Just came out.
Brand new.
I thought what was really great about this book is that at the beginning, when he's kind of sad, he's like, "Oh, I'm so sad." But then at the end, he comes to a realization. He's like, "Oh, I'm so special. I'm so great," you know, and just it kind of comes back around showing his growth. This little snail without a shell.
Yeah. And he gets to try on all these beautiful shells. And it's actually one of my favorite spreads in a children's book, maybe ever, because it's just all these different shells. They're all beautiful. Some of them are like crazy things like trash, but he doesn't know that. So he puts it on like an old ice cream cone or something. And eventually he finds the most perfect golden beautiful shell and he tries it on and it just doesn't feel right.
No. Yeah.
You know, that's a life lesson for adults. Sometimes you can be trying and trying and trying to reach something and get something. And then once you have it, you realize it wasn't important.
It's not a good fit.
Yeah.
Doesn't fit. No, absolutely stunning book. Again, with animals and the anthropomorphized animals and bugs and creatures. Like, I love all of that. It's the ones that kind of, they have that real world connection. And they have the lessons kind of peppered throughout, but they have that, the rhyming, and they have the otherworldly quality, like that whimsical quality. I mean, you can't go wrong with whimsy ever.
Yeah, we're right on that cusp of believing everything and just beginning to question, you know, are dragons real? I'm like, well, you know, dinosaurs, they say, are real. So maybe a dragon could be real. It seems like it's just a dinosaur with wings. We don't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Why not? But it is that age where,
you know, that
belief is so fun.
I feel like is so important. And me, I'm not a parent, so I'm not going to say like what to instill your kids with. But I do think it's an important quality to instill in kids to be OK. Like not everything has to be a black and white. Like you can be uncomfortable with unknowns. You can be like, I don't know that. I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe. And it, I don't know. I just feel like it really allows your imagination to go to different places. Like I remember as a child, like I was really deep, right? Like, and I was thinking about things like I was like at the time I grew up in like a family that my grandparents were very Catholic, but I remember walking home from the bus one day and being like, well, if God created this, then who created God and who created this and who created this, and going up and up and up and up and out to the universes. And I couldn't contain my thoughts, but it was just, and then I kind of arrived at, you know what? Anything could be possible. Like, and it's okay. Like, and absolutely. I find a lot of the problems in society is because people feel like it needs to be one way or the other. So instilling that in a child, that sense of like, maybe dragons are real.
Yeah, and so the wonder, good. And then just always redirecting it back to the kid and what they think. If Nina asks something, is Santa real? Is dragons real? Are fairies real? I always just ask her, what do you think? Well, what do you think? Do you think they're real? And then I give after she decides what she thinks. And I'm like, you know what? I think so, too.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that.
But I actually do think fairies are real. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Just because you haven't seen them doesn't mean they're not
there.
That's
a topic for another podcast. I have a lot to say on that one. But one thing, speaking of fairies, because this is kind of whimsical and magical and gardening, we were going to talk about like one book. We don't have much time left to talk, but Garden Wonders, which is Sarah Grindler, right? It's like her third book in a series. She did Forest Magic and
Seaside Treasures.
Yes. That's a beautiful book for spring.
And it's more of like a little instructional manual about how to get into gardening and how it works and what kind of creatures live in the soil and how things grow, which is perfect for any kid that likes to spend a little bit of time outside at least.
Yeah, because gardening is hard. So you need that child labor.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, dig the hole, Nina, because I gotta put this bush in there.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's a lot of work. I love gardening for the payoff, but I mean, the work, it's hard. It's hard labor, but it's beautiful. And there is so much, you know, it's so attached to well-being, being able to be outside, be in the dirt, be in the soil, be in nature, especially in today, in this day and age, you know, getting outdoors and getting in touch with nature is so important. So that's a beautiful book, maybe for a little bit older, like eight, like I was thinking more 8 to 10, like if they want to read it by themselves, but perfect for having your little garden buddy,
perfect
little kiddo.
For adults too. Yeah. I find that like every year I have new friends telling me that they're just starting to get into gardening, and I'm always looking at them being like, just wait.
You think
that's how it starts. That's how it starts. And the next thing you know, you're spending all kinds of money on plants at the garden center. You've got seeds you've saved over winter. You're making an entire garden. Your life is about being outside weeding. Yeah,
I know.
It happens so fast.
My peas are turning yellow. I got to get them in the garden. I just put them out on the deck this morning. But yeah, like no, 100%. It just takes up your whole life. But it's beautiful. And do you think that's a pandemic thing? Like everybody getting into it?
I think a lot of people got into it over the pandemic.
People are like, we need to start growing our own food now.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you're looking around and you're seeing the prices at the grocery store like I am, you're like, okay, how much does it cost to just grow a cucumber plant? How much does it cost to just have peppers in your backyard?
Because Lindsay's resources go to books. So.
Yeah, listen, I spend all my money on books. I can't be spending $9 for like one pepper.
No, it's wild, actually. I complain about this quite a lot. Like the shrinkflation and the changes in the prices at the grocery store. Absolutely wild. But
so,
yes.
The moral of the story is get your kids gardening young.
Yeah.
And it will last them a lifetime.
They might need this vital life skill.
Well, that's all we have time for today. But thanks so much for joining me. I absolutely love chatting with you. I hope you'll come back.
Absolutely. This is amazing. Although I can't monitor our time now that like I'm talking to you.
And
so
that's why these episodes are so long.
I'll be cutting a lot of this out.
Thank you again. And we hope you enjoy all the books we talked about today.
A lot of the books that we were mentioning are just brand new ones. So definitely go pick them up. They're in stores now.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please rate and review us, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And thank you for listening and hanging out with us. Join me next time on this book lover's journey as we try to read more, read Canadian, read local. You know, all the good things.